All the Rage with John Bowd. On www.traxfm.org.
Welcome. Wow, what a week we've had. Welcome to John Bowd's All the Rage. And just looking at the news and stuff, I'm going to try and sort of be in the middle on this and try and get a perspective on everything. John will probably obviously put what's wrong right. I'm going to go to a really good journalist. It's just a few minutes piece on the mainstream media, and why I'm playing this about the mainstream media is there's a situation ongoing at the moment in regards to anti-Semitism and allegations, and they are just allegations, certainly on one part. And the mainstream media have done something really dangerous, in my belief, but I'll leave it to Paul Mason.
I've worked in the media for 30 years. I know that the hostility to Labour leaders who want to change things is what lies behind all of this. If there was a Labour leader who said, that's fine, guys, keep your profits, keep your carbon-burning fracking industry, the press would leave them alone. There's a kind of inbuilt bias towards the status quo because many people in that industry come from better off families. I joined Newsnight in 2001. I wasn't asked, do I ski? I was asked, where do I ski? I've never touched a ski. And I'm not just talking about the BBC. Bulik, who writes for The Sun and The Mail and The Express, all the people who write in baby language, down to working class people, they're all highly educated at Oxford. So what is it? It's a machine for telling lies. Now, it's not just that. Sometimes it tells the truth. But at election time, that's what it's become. In this election, already, before they've produced a single policy themselves, the Conservatives are producing a lie a day about Labour. And I predict towards the end of this election, this will become very, very vicious. It will be targeted at migrants. It will be targeted at you, the progressive people. You will be called terrorists for supporting Jeremy Corbyn. In the 1920s, when Labour was in power and held an election, MI5 faked a document called the Zinoviev letter. It said, from the communists to the Labour Prime Minister, hooray, Labour Prime Minister, let's get on with building communism in Britain. It's what we call a red scare. It was printed on the front of the Daily Mail on election day, and it swung the election. I expect there to be one Zinoviev letter scale lie per day in the last 7 days of this election. You've just got to get your heads around the fact of why. We are on the point of decisive progress, of leaving behind the crap of starving children, of crumbling public infrastructure. We're on the point of change, real change. When I was a BBC journalist, Gordon Brown took over. I noticed then that as soon as there wasn't somebody in power, like Blair, who was completely sold on the priorities of the rich and the warmongers, what happened is that the media switched gear. All they wanted to do was attack Gordon Brown. They used to say, and they used to repeat, these vile slanders that he was mad, that he was depressed, that he was a psychopath. So Gordon Brown, you know, psychopath. Then it was Ed Miliband's turn. And Ed Miliband, middle of the road, centrist left politician, a decent guy. They focused on his dad, who was a Jewish academic. And they said Ed Miliband's dad hated Britain. They painted Ed Miliband as a weirdo, eating his bacon sandwich. Gordon Brown's a psychopath, Miliband's a weirdo. And now it's Corbyn's a racist, or Corbyn's a terrorist, Corbyn's a Czech spy. All the lies they come out with. What we need is for the managers of the big broadcasters, BBC, Sky, ITN, to actually have the courage to allow their journalists to call out lies. And if they don't, you should call them out. We are our own media. The other side are spreading disinformation through their networks, stigmatizing campaigners. We're not going to do the same thing from the left. We are fighting to defend democracy. You don't defend democracy by imitating the people who are trying to smash democracy. The way we're going to win this election is to listen to the anger that comes at us on the doorstep and understand where it comes from, but then tell a better story. It's about telling a story of what kind of country this could become and what kind of people we could become if we were just empowering our own potential. And not constantly having to struggle from day to day with debt, with mortgage payments, with, you know, for some people, food banks. We could become a really brilliant society and a country, and that message of hope has to be got out. You get in the back of a taxi, some racist guy, you ignore them. You're in a kebab queue late at night, 12 o'clock, some racist guy or somebody who says Corbyn this, Corbyn that, you ignore them. This time in history is the time to stand up for who we are. Be proud to be progressive. That's where the combined strength of the Tory lie machine and the media's inability to deal with it, that's what it's designed to create. A position where we're too scared to talk, too scared to put a poster in the window. Be the opposite. Be proud, be confident. And the face-to-face discussions that we have now, whether we win or lose, will lay a basis for the long-term transformation of this country. And I think we can win. But if we win, what happens? The banks attack us. Well, that's the time we need all those people you talk to in the school gate, in the kebab queue, on the bus. We need them on the streets. So the face-to-face discussions we have now are a huge investment for making the Labour government deliver what we all know it can deliver.
Excellent. Thanks, Paul. That was from Double Down Media. Do check them out. Really interesting few minutes there. Paul was a journalist, mainstream media, and as he just said, when he worked for their mainstream media, they would ask him where he goes skiing, and he was like, "I've never gone skiing. I've never been. You know, I can't afford it." And he worked with very, 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 very smart journalists, but he said that what would come out on the newspapers was like baby language. You know, now whether one believes everything that he says or whether they don't, feel free to come at the www.tracksfm.org. There's a chat room there. And if you come in and just say, you know, well, he's wrong, you're wrong, John's wrong, your station's wrong, you're right, and we'll have that debate, you know. We're not going to be rude. We'll just put some facts out, you know. Me and John was going to talk about the Labour Party manifesto. John, I think you've got some interesting tidbits there, sir.
I do, mate. Before we move on to the main aspect, though, I'll just come back a little bit on that video. I had actually seen that video, and hearing it back on the show is most interesting. One thing that's worth taking up is in this whole supposed anti-Semitism fracas running through the Labour Party, is that a lot of those cases started under Ed Miliband's leadership. It was Jeremy and his people that came and actually dealt with a lot more of them. But then again, the sad thing is that the poisonous hatred of anti-Semitism has been used as a political tool and nothing more during most of this. And the most recent intervention, which is entirely a political intervention by the chief rabbi, is absolutely nothing more than that. There's a quote from him, a photograph of him standing here with Boris Johnson, David Cameron, and it says, quote from Rabbi Mervitz, "I'm delighted to congratulate Boris Johnson, a long-standing friend and champion of the Jewish community, on becoming the next leader of the Conservative Party and our next Prime Minister, as he accepts upon himself the mantle of responsibility to lead our nation. May he be blessed with the wisdom and successfully navigate the political uncertainties we face and bring healing and prosperity to our great country." Okay, well, for starters, it's time to get a little bit realistic. How in the fuck do you honestly think Boris Johnson is going to do that? He is a racist idiot who can't remember what he said one minute to the next and literally cannot stop himself from lying. So how is it you think he's going to bring healing and prosperity? I mean, yeah, he does have the potential to unite people against him. But this is, as I say, an entirely political intervention. And I've had enough of it. I've had enough of hearing it. I've had enough of much of the left's pitiful apologetic side. Listen, I don't apologise unless I've done something wrong. When I've done something wrong, I'll apologise and I'll be the first to do so. But we haven't done anything wrong here. Any particular cases, as we've said on this show before, of anti-Semitic abuse, they go where they need to go, which is to the police. They go to the hate crimes department. I mean, it's very interesting to me. I don't like to do the "I spoke to someone" thing, but this is just one. I think this is something worth passing on. A friend of mine I spoke to, who was talking about, you know, she was in a bar and some scumbag was chatting her up, which is fairly typical. And she said something about, I don't know, I think Tottenham came up or whatever. And he starts on a load of anti-Semitic stuff. And of course, she then tells him that she's Jewish. And obviously, you know, he wants to get his nuts in, so he starts pretending that he didn't really mean it and all this stuff. And I said to her, so why didn't you report him? Did you? You should have reported him to the people that work there. Try and get a name and actually report him to the police. Oh, well, no, well, you know, it's not really worth it. Okay, that's not what an actual occasion of anti-Semitic abuse to your face is not worth reporting, but it's actually worth going over rumour after rumour of it happening in a political party, which actually, in a lot of cases, chances are you ain't going to vote for in the first place anyway. That is an amazing logic, which I will be the first to put my hand up and say, I do not understand it. It's almost like, well, you've just basically got a political axe to grind. And you have, because the one thing that really isn't being mentioned here, and we all know it's a massive, great, big, apartheid, settler state elephant in the room, is Israel. Because that is what a lot of this is about. It's about the Labour Party having a leader who is a supporter of Palestinian rights. And that has always made certain people in the mainstream culture very uncomfortable. Now, if any of this seems like, what is this this guy doing spouting all this stuff? Yeah, okay, fair comment. May I direct you to people like David Rosenberg, great British historian and a very interesting man who's been on this very show. And I would encourage you to do his East End walks too. Check out his Twitter page. You know, he's there's nothing I'm saying here that hasn't been said there. But there is one thing above all else, and this is a situation that's made me just deeply and extremely angry since yesterday. But I'm gonna put a top on it now because we need to move on and talk about the manifesto as best we can. And that is, when you are a spiritual person, which I am not, yeah, something you need to explain to me, because I would very much like to try and understand this. You believe in God. You believe that one day, no doubt, you will meet your God in the next life. So when you do that, how do you explain that for political gain, you lied? You lied about your religion, you lied about abuse that didn't really take place, or you exaggerated small acts of abuse that did take place, many of which were dealt with correctly anyway. How do you face your God and say that you used your belief and your religion? I'm fascinated into the mindset that you have. Or if you just convinced yourself that you're so right and so holy that you couldn't possibly do anything wrong. When you're encouraging people not to vote for the party who, as we're going to see this evening when we look at their manifesto, are the only party that have a people-centered manifesto after 9 years of brutal conservative rule. Okay, where people have died. People have died on having their benefits cut. People have died being forced back into work. That blood is on the hands of absolutely everyone who has voted Tory, and especially if you do so in this election. And it might as well be on the hands of the people who vote Lib Dem too, because they are responsible for a good portion of it as well. That's on you. And to any of my trade union comrades out there, you like being in a trade union? You like people like me and Dave standing up and fighting for your rights? Well, then you only have one choice, and that's to vote Labour, because if the Conservatives get in, they're going to destroy what few rights we have left, and we'll come to that in a little while. However, let's go straight into the manifesto now. I've said all of that. Now, the first thing I would say is to actually encourage everyone to read the manifesto all the way through. I have not read absolutely every aspect of it. I'm sorry, I tried, but I ran out of time between it coming out Thursday and tonight's show. But I have got enough of it that I've broken down to discuss, and we'll probably discuss a good portion of it next week as well. We're going to put the most important and exciting parts on tonight's show. The Labour Party 2019 election manifesto is categorised into five sections. A green industrial revolution, rebuild our public services, tackle poverty and inequality, the final say on Brexit, and a new internationalism. And we will scrape through as many of those as we can manage, even though I don't have a cup of tea at my side. More than 1.5 million young people have registered to vote since the start of this election, which is a little point I thought was worth mentioning. But we're going to go into the breakdown. So, Dave, pens at the ready. Any part you want to add here? We're going to talk about healthcare to begin with. The manifesto states clearly, Labour will give the NHS the funding it needs. There is a crisis in social care in Britain right now, with high-profile examples of private companies abusing elderly and vulnerable people in care homes or sometimes in their own homes. We see people being means-tested constantly over how much savings they have, so social care is denied if they have what's considered too much or they can pay their own way, and that is a problem that's been going on for some time. If you're familiar with the British media, and the BBC when it's not being shit, then you would have seen some very good reports that they've put out in the last few years, where they've gone undercover in homes for the elderly and the vulnerable, and shown shocking and disgusting, but nevertheless necessary, shining a light on abuse. And all of them are private companies. And then what tends to happen is they close down and they skip out of town, and then whoever was in their homes is just left without pot to piss in, and away they go. Labour will prevent the NHS from being sold off to people like Mr. Johnson's friend Donald Trump. We will shut down attempts to give the UK a disease industry like they have in the US. And the NHS spending will increase an average of 4.3% a year with healthcare guarantees and an end to patient charges. Stabilisation of A&E will be a priority, and the Health and Social Care Act will be repealed. Services and subsidies will be brought back in-house. As we all know, many of them have been taken outside, and that is problematic. Quote from the directly from the manifesto here. Our investment means we deliver the standards of care enshrined in the NHS. We will stabilise our overstretched A&E departments. We will improve stroke, heart disease and cancer survival rates by providing earlier diagnosis and improved screening rates. We will call a moratorium on bed cuts, and mental health services will be greatly improved. Now, mental health services is a section that I haven't quite managed to get into, so perhaps we'll come back to that next week. But I definitely want to highlight, because it's one of the most important things that goes under diagnosed or under treated in this country, and that's a very sad state of affairs. I'll go straight on to talking about workers, and obviously the biggest section. I've put work under one kind of very broad bracket. Labour will set a real living wage at a minimum of £10 an hour. All will have equal rights at work from their first day of employment, and exploitation will end principally by ending 0 hours contracts. As part of the Green Industrial Revolution, 1 million jobs are predicted to be built within that bracket. Many of these will be in the areas of the country ignored by successive governments for decades and degraded through deindustrialising, and all this will be done with trade union involvement because, as Dave has noted, Mr. Corbyn and Mr. McDonnell are the kind of people who stand on picket lines rather than condemn you for going on them. In fact, I've actually been on a picket line with John McDonnell. It was outside the Brixton Ritzy Cinema. He and Owen Jones were there, among others, and the great people from the Ritzy Living Wage campaign. Great people. Maternity and paternity leave will be increased. All these will also apply to the self-employed and newer workers, along with everyone else. So none of this, you know, you start working in a place and, oh yeah, you don't really qualify for the full rights and the full pay and all that bollocks. You know, that's going out the window. Also, they will mandate that leave can be granted for miscarriages and bereavements.
So what happened when these policies were put together? I just like to remind people, look, I'm going to be in the centre of this. Okay, I'm just not, you know where I'm going to stand, where I stand unofficially. But I just think when these policies were put together, there was a consensus of doctors, nurses, trade unions, workers, solicitors, big businesses, small businesses, and it was a meeting of minds. And rather than allow the spin doctors, the room was full of people that were involved in these industries, which kind of makes me kind of interested. And people on benefits, difficulties getting people who use food banks. There was a big consensus of people in the room on all of these policies. And the one John just mentioned was quite interesting because they literally, they must have talked themselves, the NEC, to death, to nurses and doctors and pharmaceutical companies. I mean, Glasgow was in the room as well, which was quite interesting. So it wasn't a small committee of millionaires. It was people that are in those industries. John?
Yeah, exactly. So consulting the people to whom have already done the work and consulting people to whom it will most apply. I really think that, and maybe I should give a little detail for this because I know we have a lot of international listeners. I've no doubt your system is similar. But in this country, the manner in which the unemployed have been treated in recent years, nothing new there. There was a brief period in the 90s when it was cool to pretend that you were working class, but the period we entered, certainly under the Conservatives rule and a fair bit under New Labour, has actually been a little bit more back to bashing the unemployed and the working class in general. And it's a very dehumanising effect. And I really think that that is an important thing to bring people into and say, yeah, we might not be employed right now, but that doesn't mean that you don't have a worthwhile, meaningful view on going forward, because you have as much right to a future as anybody else. And I'm really glad that the party did that. Next section, just quickly, there was a quote, on immigration, which I liked very much. It said, Labour recognises the huge benefits of immigration to our country. Many British citizens have benefited from freedom of movement, which has given them the opportunity to study, work, or retire abroad. Likewise, our public services and our industry have benefited from skilled workers coming here. End of quote. And the manifesto also condemns the use of EU nationals as a bargaining chip during the whole Brexit negotiations, and I quite agree, it's about time that's been said. There's a lot of these little details, these little sentences that I like to highlight, because this is often the stuff where, if you watch the mainstream media that Mr. Mason was talking about at the top of the show, you would think never actually happens because it never gets mentioned, but that's that. Dave, do you want to put anything in on that, or we'll move on to talking about pay?
As I said, I was really pleased with the investigation into the manifesto. So normally any workers' change of conditions, any sort of changes in their workplace, I always agree in a buy-in in that. And it's not, I'm not being left a softy or fluffy. I'm not the type to say, or if I was a boss, spit, you know, you do as I say, or get out the door and all that. But that boss wouldn't know what, if you get rid of that person, you're getting rid of a load of experience, you've invested in their training, and bang, they're gone. You'll get someone else in, reinvest in their training, start them all over again. And if you treat people like that, they'll leave. So you'll always judge a company or a bad company by their retention levels. And if people are in and out the door all the time, you've got a real problem, because that business will never grow. Never. So you get your buy-in by people, and let them feel proud of the company they work for, treat them well, and they'll do things for you that you could never do, no matter how much advertising you do and stuff like that. So if we look at Amazon, for example, the way they treat their workers, and people leave more than they recruit, and their quality of service, they doorstep your packets, they leave it behind the bin. They not. It's terrible, that's the way they're treated. It's a fact, John.
Yeah, I quite agree. That is definitely. One of the few parts of my job I do take seriously is security. I don't fuck around with people's mail or their stuff, even though, quite frankly, you hyper consumerist dead enders really wouldn't probably miss about 70 of your 89 parcels that come through every day, but you do take care of those things. The thing I just wanted to a side note that point about companies, what their retention rates are like. You told me that once, I think, when I just started doing some work for people outside of directly of the CWU for other stuff. And that was one of the things you told me, and it's a very, very good point, actually, because if you look at a lot of companies, you can tell a lot about them, depending on how much people actually want to work there. So what the management is like. Okay, so going on to pay. £10 minimum wage, we talked about national minimum wage. There's also going to be pay rises in the public sector and many public sector jobs, including where people start, not just when they've been there a while, when they actually start. So a newly qualified teacher will get a rise of £1,200. A newly qualified nurse will get the same. And let's not forget that the Tories took away the nurse's bursary, which is a very helpful and beneficial pay. You've got a lot of... one of the things I like, actually, you've got a lot of promises coming out of Johnson right now about how he's going to put X amount of nurses into Britain at an incredibly quick rate. Well, for those of you that like to take some kind of ridiculous anti-immigrant bent, training to be anyone in the medical profession takes a good period of time. So in the time that people are starting their courses to be nurses or doctors or surgeons, whatever else, where do you think they're going to come from? Ones that we need now. So there you are. Anyway, a starting junior doctor, rise of 1,400. Police constable gets $2,000. Don't see why. An army sergeant gets 1,700. Don't see why. Lots of money for killing people. A firefighter gets a rise of 1,800. Civil servant 1,300, and a local government worker 1,200. So there's some numbers there. I'm not just sticking them in for the sake of it. Like I say, go and read it yourself, the manifesto, and you can make up your own, you know, ideas around that. But I just thought some of those were worth noting. Labour will also create a national investment bank backed by a network of regional banks to provide £250 billion for infrastructure, enterprise and innovation over 10 years, all part of decarbonising the economy. So this is very important here. You're going into the whole element of the need to, as it says, decarbonise our economy. We need to stop trying to make anything out of carbon, because it's, you know, we can't keep releasing it to the world. It has to change. But also, as I'm sure this is similar in many other countries, after the 2008 or so crash, banks, despite being given money specifically to do their job, such as lending, they basically stopped doing it. They suddenly became very, very scared after they got a big fat socialist government bailout, while the rest of us went to hell. So they weren't doing that. What they're saying here, of course, the Labour Party is saying, is not only will you have that, you have an investment bank, but with the regional banks, it means it will be able to be a lot more local in its understanding. You know, I take a shot at business people in general, mainly because I hate them. But there's actually a lot in this manifesto, especially for the smaller business person. There's also demand that corporations pay the taxes properly, which is under absolutely no circumstances ever a bad thing. Okay, I don't care what you've read or what you've seen anywhere else. Anyway.
John Bouts, all the rage, all the rage. On Trax FM. Trax FM. Fascinating Trax FM. Rhythm. It's got me on the moon. Fascinating rhythm. Lock me on.
Because this is clear.
what year that was. Bass-O-Matic, anyway. I'm sure it was 1990 or 1991. And Fascinating Rhythm, you're listening to John Bowes All the Rage. John's gone for a lovely cup of tea. Just before he continues on the Labour Party manifesto, there's something that is quite disturbing for me. So I'm going to take a centre, neutral, on this discussion. When John was talking about the anti-Semitism stuff, and what bothers me is I've seen some factions that I haven't seen for quite a few years, and it's quite disturbing because there's another faction that's now come into it, which I never thought in a month of Sundays would happen. So we saw the anti-Irish sympathiser, Corbyn sympathiser, posts which had no evidence whatsoever. And then we saw a lot of anti-Muslim, including conservative MPs or councillors, which had documented, they put their stuff up there, it was up there, they said what they said about Muslims and Mohammedia, that's what that was their wording. And now, of course, you've seen that rabbi saying what he did, which I believe he's, I don't think he should have said what he said. It's not, it shouldn't be. I think like the Americans, it's like church and state. And then fourth, which is a really disturbing, is now the Hindu Council of Britain has written to the rabbi and agrees with him, agrees that the Labour Party used to be non-fascist, agrees, or for some reason has said that Corbyn approved of the attack on the Indian embassy, has accused Labour Party members of supporting Kashmir, and apparently the bottom line is that they understand, and I know that Bob Blackman has been sending letters to Asian families in Harrow East saying that Corbyn is the most un-Indian man, un-Indian politician. And it's frightening now, because to get to power, for someone to get to power, you would split this wonderful society up, this society that was proud of soaking up other cultures and helping each other and welcoming the Ugandan Indians in the early 70s, who've now, you know, my wife's Ugandan Indian, you know, she came here in 72. And that wonderful country that she came to, that was able to donate clothes and help them because it was snowing then. And my parents were from Guyana, and they bought their house. And all that is now, all that has gone down the drain. All of that years of wonderful community is gone. And I wouldn't mind if it was done by clever people, but it's not. It's done out of hate, and they will get into power, earn their money, and go, and we'll be left with it. And I think it will get to the point where it's irreparable, in that some of these people believe this stuff, and I think they'll go to their grave believing that. And it will be our children that have got to pick up the pieces. I just can't see much future for any child in this country at the moment. John, are you back now?
I am, yes. No, I heard everything you said, and I quite agree. The only thing I'd add on the Hindu Council, right? I mean, actually, I've known about this for a while because somebody I know has been showing me stories that have appeared in on Indian websites and stuff like that, talking about a kind of anti-Corbyn bias running through certain parts of the mainstream. I mean, if there's one thing that unites a lot of this, I think, in some of these other groups, is that it's all to do with a conservative mainstream. They're the ones that have a problem with Jeremy Corbyn and the Labour Party, now that the Labour Party is back to being what it's supposed to be, which is a left-wing socialist party. If you say that Corbyn is the most un-Indian, according to Bob Blackman, well, if you mean like Modi, yeah, you're right, he's not responsible for any massacres, and he's not presiding over a country where people are being killed because there's rumours they did something nasty to a cow, then yeah, he's not. But that's not Indian people. That's just one leader who I happen, like many people, to have quite a few problems with. I also think he's actually done some moderately decent things in regards providing better access to toilets all over the country. But again, there's a this is a general attitude I have towards politicians and people who provide services. I really do hate it when they want thanks for doing their job, you know. So, yes, you have done that, and it's good to acknowledge, and it's good to acknowledge that the absolutely hopeless Congress Party did nothing of anywhere near that, because they were basically like a glorified Clinton clan. But at the same time, you did your job, bitch. Why are you standing on my doorstep wanting thanks? You know. Anyway, so that's, yeah, I agree that that is very, all of what you said there, Dave, is very, very sad. And I honestly do believe that we have the chance to change that with this election and with getting the Labour Party into power. Because this isn't just going to be about winning an election. That's the start of it. We're going to have to fight. You and I know perfectly well that in order to get rid of these appalling trade union laws, which we're going to talk about in a minute, that we are going to have to dig in and fight. And we know that tomorrow, on the night this program being broadcast live as we speak, which is on Wednesday, the 27th of November, we know that tomorrow the CWU are going to the High Court, again, I believe it's the High Court, to appeal the decision that a judge made to say that we can't go on strike when we want to. You know, even when we fulfilled the criteria of the 2016 Trade Unions Act, where we've had over 50% of our in our membership take part in the vote, and as we know, 97% out of those that voted, which was 68%, they voted in favour.
Yeah, it's 76%, John.
70, I'm sorry, I got that wrong.
So just to let everyone know, that was the highest since 2016 and the anti-trade union laws. That was the highest threshold, just wiped off. It just went beyond anything that whoever put that law in would dream about. And even then they found a way to kill it, or try to kill it. But as Terry Pullinger, the DGSP, says, and I agree with him, in that this country, its workers, which is all of you, not some of you, it's all of you. Don't think it's just a little. See those four people in that corner, they're workers. No, it's everyone. You've been trodden on, but some of us fight back. John?
Exactly. And I would say about everything you said before, which is sadly true in many ways, but I honestly don't believe that the situation is without hope, because as you see among a lot of stories, a lot of smaller scale stories, which this show tries to shine as many lights on as we can within the time and resources that we have. And we could be able to do that a hell of a lot more if I was able to retire from work and all of you good listeners could feed
John,
money in.
John, I'll just be very clear that Trax FM do not get paid.
No, we
don't. And if at any point you want to do a 3-hour show, it can happen.
So,
the only reason you don't get the time is because that stupid idiot is on after you.
Well, it's because these poor people have an hour of this screaming, ranting, caffeined up, you know, washed up 40-something.
I've noticed so. I always make sure you have your tea, don't I?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're good. Yeah, I'm half a cup of tea and two bits of chocolate orange, and I'm fucking raring for the fight. But no, if you look at some of the things, I mean, look at some of the interviews that we're fortunate enough to have on here. You know, I was
without those interviews, and it's amazing the technology now. In that, I'm 50. I think I'm 53. I always forget my missus there. Tell me, and I've been living my life not just thinking everything's around me. Just my peripheral vision is just that is around me, or stuff happening at work, but when you speak to the people, you get on, or we get emails from West Virginia and stuff, and you,
it
that's the beauty of technology. It broadens your horizons. And when we talk to Francisco and the stripper representative,
Stacey
stripper. You know what I mean, John. It's not being disrespectful.
Well, she's a member of the East London Strippers Collective, so I understand.
Absolutely, yeah. So, we, you know, you get different ends of the spectrum. John, it's fantastic.
It's interesting you mentioned that, because I've been trying to get Stacey back on. Our schedules haven't matched up, but I'd like to catch up with her. But also, I was going to say, Alex Green, who was on before talking about the black cap, the famous LGBT plus establishment in Camden, which was shut down, and the owner wanted to build flats there, as everyone in London seems to want to do. And funny enough, there was flats none of the fucking rest of us can afford. But anyway, that guy, the owner, he's basically taken a step down because he knows he can't sell the, he can't knock the place down and build flats anymore. So it's now going up for a bid, and I believe Alex and the Black Cap group are going to try and put in a bid to take control, to take ownership of that building so they can open it up as a club again.
That'd be great. I mean,
no doubt they'll have a fundraiser. We should all, and I'll definitely big that up if they do. But that's a little example, mate, of something that, that
well, know, there is some progress. It's a personal point of personal, it's a personal interest to me about Home Secretary or maybe a future Home Secretary coming in, or small businesses coming in, if it's a Labour Party, because I'll be writing to them asking them if they're going to change the FM broadcast laws.
Yeah.
And I'll just say that we're a non-profit station. I pay for this from my own pocket, and I'd like to do something on FM. And would you give me permission to put an FM transmitter? But she might say no, who knows?
Well, I don't know. She'll probably try and deport you. She's not very nice. the thing is, I mean, just on my personal opinion on that, with the exception of one show on one station, I don't listen to FM radio anymore. And a good portion of the time I listen to that online or via digital. There's fuck all on the FM dial that is worth listening to. It's all garbage. So if you actually want to save it, you need to give people like us a show.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very 80s. I do apologise, kids. But you're right. I think everything is Netflix, Apple, iPod, replays. So if you look at Sky, I do apologise, John. If you look at Sky, Sky is not that popular live apart from football. Sky is popular on their catch-up. It's hugely popular, actually. BBC, kids don't watch BBC live. Certainly they don't watch their news, and who would? But... well, kids watch BBC iPlayer, and Netflix has just gone through the roof. And Netflix, as I said, I know you've got to pay for it, but as I said, they've got some really interesting documentaries, i.e. The Big Hack. You kids got to watch The Big Hack. Actually, it was kids that told me about The Big Hack.
I still haven't watched it, actually. You should also watch Hip Hop Evolution. That's a brilliant program.
Produced by Russell Peters.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so if you think you're like me, that maybe you've kind of seen it and heard it all before with a lot of music documentaries, that one has been really, really good. I must say it's been a lot of different, diverse subject matter, even within the confines of all the stuff that you know. There's a great set of interviews with people on there who have never really been, more or less many of them been ignored by some of the more mainstream. Schooly D's on there. I haven't seen him for years.
Yeah, he doesn't do interviews, but I think because it was Russell Peters. And Russell Peters is a hip-hop student, great scratch DJ, and people don't even know that. Hip-hop, Netflix is good. I'd rather play Netflix than a bloody TV license, John.
No, I know what you mean. But just, I mean, as far as the FM is concerned, look, I don't think it's nostalgic. It still exists, and clearly it exists for a reason. Enough people listen to it. That's fine. But I just think it's going down. It's a generational thing. And I'm very serious that if you, to the radio licensing authorities out there, if you really want to save it, if you really want it to have some kind of relevance, you need to start being a bit more charitable with your licenses, because you need to get more interesting, diverse groups of people. People much younger than these two old geezers here. But nevertheless, we have something to add. It's got to be said. Listen, do you want to... times are ticking. Do you want to talk about the trade union laws?
Yeah, go for it, John.
Okay, so in the Labour manifesto... So if you're just coming back in from the music break when I made a cup of tea, welcome back. We're talking about the Labour manifesto for the 2019 general election of Great Britain, UK, whatever the fuck it is. Okay. The headlines on the trade union laws. These are the things that the manifesto is looking at providing. Electronic and workplace strike ballots, something that's very relevant. We've talked about this many times, Dave, and the CWU will tell you right now is definitely a good thing. Removing the unnecessary restrictions on industrial action. A bit more detail on that later. Union access to organise in all workplaces. A ban on union busting, and the repeal of the anti-union legislation, also known as the Trade Union Act 2016, and newer rights. So, as part of the war against the working class that was started by Thatcher and carried on since, the extreme levels achieved by the Conservatives over the last 9 years include making trade union activities much harder and therefore reducing working class power and the ability that we everyday people have to actually govern our own lives. The area where the war was most brutal is the benefits system. Labour have promised to scrap the deeply punitive Department of Work and Pensions, also known as DWP, on day one, replacing it with a Department for Social Security. Under the rule, most notably of Ian Duncan Smith, access to welfare has been made into a deliberately cruel and difficult activity, with recipients sanctioned for spurious reasons and left without money for food, for rent, heating and other basic needs. They are often reliant on food banks. We've seen a shocking growth of those, while teachers and doctors warn that children are showing signs of rickets and malnutrition, and people are dying after being denied disability benefits and being declared fit to work, fit for work. I know many of you might have heard this before, but there is just something about reading it over and over again. There's something about reading of disabled people being denied benefits and declared fit for work that in some cases ends up killing them, and children suffering from malnutrition. If you vote Conservative or Lib Dem at the next election, that is on you. I don't care how you feel about that. It's on you. Okay, that you have to get with the reality of this situation, because that's what you're doing to the world. And you wonder why kids might grow up full of hate. Dave, before I go on to the environment, do you want to...
Well, just on the environment, but certainly the benefits, workers' rights and council housing.
Housing is... I've got that a bit further down the list.
Yeah, the amount of council houses built. Now, some may say where we're going to get the builders from and so forth. I'm not sure about that. I think the consensus, there's a plan there. But I'll tell you the political strategy on that, and this happened in the 60s. When you give people these sort of social benefits, workers' rights, council housing, or affordable housing, and a decent social welfare system, what you do is you create Labour Party voters. You create generations of them, actually, and this is the fear, in my belief. Remember, I'm saying I'm going to be neutral on this. I'm just saying that I'm speaking political strategy now. You must listen, kids, or men, even old people. Listen, when you do this social stuff, housing, benefits, workers' rights, you create generations of Labour Party voters. It's not that you're going to make them lots of money. It's just their ideology. And that's what they're afraid of. Because believe me, I think what they'll do is, and remember, if you study Jeremy Corbyn and people say he's a Marxist or he's a Leninist or whatever, he's not. He's a Benite. He's a Tony Benite. But if you look at Tony Benn and say, well, he was a... Oh, look at him. He's just left. And no, he wasn't, because it was one person who used to clap when he used to speak in the Houses of Parliament, and that was Margaret Thatcher, because Margaret Thatcher regarded Tony Benn as a teacher. And actually, Tony Benn used to not agree with our policies, but just when she spoke, because she got that off Tony Benn. Weird, isn't it? Because they both believed that politicians should be teachers. And at every speech from Tony Benn in the 60s and 70s and 80s, at the back there you'd see Jeremy Corbyn. Corbyn is not a Marxist or whatever. He's a Bennite. And Tony Benn's biggest fan was Margaret Thatcher. Just bear that in mind. John?
Yeah, the only thing I'd say in response to that is, so what if I am a fucking Marxist? That's not a bad thing. But I know.
Just labels. And if I was neutral, John, that's, yeah. You know, if you look at some of the shit on Facebook, you know.
I quite agree. And if you look at this manifesto, and if you look, which is basically a European social democratic manifesto, only in a part of the world where they understand social democracy as being something other than the piss weak.
That's why they're going to get a good deal. That's why they're going to get a good Brexit deal, John.
Yeah, yeah. If you need one, yeah.
I think he'll be in there 5 minutes.
It's because he's a daddy. Okay, so. But yeah, that's no bad thing. Okay, so yeah, so we've covered about trade union laws. Basically, they're going to be made a hell of a lot better under Labour. So, environment, let's see. We haven't got a lot of time left, Dave. What do you want to do? Okay, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll skip this. I'm going to go to... we'll talk about the environment next week. I'm going to go to housing. And we'll talk about that because you've already mentioned it. So just a very brief bit on this. Labour will bring in rent controls to make sure landlords make necessary repairs and such like to keep properties inhabitable. Tenants will be protected from eviction as well. You will not be spurious reasons for being kicked out of your home. They will build 100,000 council homes and 50,000 social housing units a year. Rents will be linked to local earnings, therefore making them, in the words of the manifesto, genuinely affordable. And this would take millions off waiting lists that have remained stagnant as Conservatives have failed to build the homes that they have promised. They have built zero of the starter homes they claimed that they would. That is a very important headline, folks. They've been here nearly 9 years. It was, I believe, under Cameron's time when he talked about building starter homes for young, hip couples who will, you know, own a car. Remember, of course, that the housing was a big thing for the Thatcher governments. They wanted this country to be full of property owners, so that that was their main concern. No collective identity, no uniting with your class or with your fellow workers. It was all about owning property and a car and just being, you know, if you're riding the bus off to 25, you're a loser or something, that kind of crap, you know. Well, we're not going to have that, and the Conservatives have built zero starter homes in their time. Labour will introduce fire safety to fit sprinklers and other measures, such as replacing dangerous cladding to prevent tragedies like Grenfell from happening again. Labour will act to bring housing costs down and to bring standards up. Just a quick quote here. The gap between the housing haves and have-nots is at the heart of the injustice in our country today. So that's the main section on housing. Dave, do you want to comment on anything there? That's all right, mate. Take your time. we're real lax tonight, folks. We're just being cool.
No, I'm sorry. Don't worry, I'll be edited. Yeah, in regards to social housing, as I said, just as a political strategist, what that policy does, John, is it creates generations of Labour supporters. What I want to say, I'd like to say that the voter registration recently is happened in whenever. I'd like to put a precedent, but it doesn't. It doesn't. I can't put it against anything. So 4 million people have registered to vote since the election was announced. 1 million did so in 48 hours. I can't say this happened in 78 or 77 or 74 or 71. I can't begin. Most of those 4 million were under 25. Unbelievable. So it's funny how the society, whatever happens on December the 12th, whatever happens, I think politics has changed. And I think it's made people, as younger people, look at things and what's right and what's wrong. And they've seen politics actually work for them, or attempting to work for them. So whoever, if Labour lose, and Corbyn would probably have to resign, they better be good, who they got, because you'll lose them, you'll lose that generation, you lose a generation of future voters that want a better life for my kids and my children's children, because if we go the way we're going, certainly in the last 10 years, I think it's difficult, because for my kids or people like me, the only where they're going to get on the property ladder is if I die, because the house goes to them, doesn't it? So, and that's my age group. They'll have no chance of getting a property or a good or meaningful employment. They won't understand about democratic rights, transparency, the decent thing to do, anti-fascism, anti-racist. Because the way we're going, it's worse than Reaganomics, actually, John.
It is, because it's more desperate, because that system has failed so miserably, and this is its last, screaming, spiteful, lashing out as its dying breath is coming over it. I think that's so accurate. There is so much more I want to say, but we're going to leave it till next week, because I think it's the best way. So we haven't covered the environment. We haven't talked about Brexit, thank God. We haven't talked about education, but that's okay. We'll come. And also, I want to talk about the response has been so far to the manifesto. In fact, okay, I will say a little bit about that. Labour, as Dave has pointed out earlier this evening, are responding very much to what people want from them. This is a very people-centric party with a very people-centric manifesto. Some of these ideas have been trialled too, such as the, again, renationalisations, which we'll talk about, as I say, next week. For many years, renationalisation has been popular, and the free broadband idea is also a winner among those who are asked. Now, last weekend we saw the launch of the Conservative Party manifesto, and there was nothing much to report, really, except perhaps that the way it's been reported. It's a very lowbrow manifesto, promising to return some of the cuts to a status less than as bad as they were before they were cut, basically. So it's what I mean by that is they've cut them. They're going to say they'll put maybe a quarter back or a third maybe, and then that's it. Grace Blakely reported this as the Conservative Party manifesto is less credible than Labour's, but it hasn't been pulled apart in the same way. Perhaps, as she says in a quote, appeals to economic credibility are used to defend the interests of the powerful. It's well worth noting. Also, something the Tories also included a little piece about banning public bodies from imposing their own direct or indirect boycotts, claiming that things like divestment from foreign countries does not help community cohesion, and saying that basically that's something only government should be allowed to do. It seems like a funny thing for them to be concerned about now, after 9 years of wrecking community cohesion, but there you are. This rule basically is designed to attack BDS movement. Simple as that. It's designed to stop you from saying, I don't want my pension fund invested in arms going to Israel or Saudi Arabia or somewhere like that. And the Conservative manifesto recognises there's a crisis in social care, but pledges no money to it, nor any solution to solve it. So otherwise, it really is just what it says. It's Conservative. It's simple as that. Okay, so my take on all of this, I will save for next week. I want to give the last words this evening to Mr. Corbyn from a recent speech. And by the way, one other point you should remember is this: the reason we're reading that entire manifesto is because what you think or don't think of Jeremy Corbyn is completely irrelevant. This is a manifesto. It's something that's going to be carried out by an entire political party when it comes into government. So if he's the leader or he's not the leader, or if he's a backbencher or a frontbencher, it doesn't matter. If you don't like the way he dresses, because there really isn't any other thing you can possibly have any real reason to dislike him, or any of that kind of stuff, it doesn't matter. This is a working class pro people party manifesto. Anyway, from a recent speech by Mr. Corbyn, Labour is on your side, and they could scarcely be a clearer demonstration of that than the furious reaction of the rich and powerful. If the bankers, billionaires, and the establishment thought we represented politics as usual, that we could be bought off, that nothing was really going to change, they wouldn't attack us so ferociously. But they know we mean what we say. They know we will deliver on our plans, which is why they want to stop us being elected. They know we will go after the tax dodgers, the bad bosses, and the big polluters so that everybody in our country gets a fair chance in life. That's why they throw everything they've got at us, because they're scared of real change. So, 12th of December, make history and make your life better. Vote with your conscience. Vote Labour. Thanks, Dave.